Hello, this is Mary Moreland reading the News Gazette Part 1 for Thursday, April 16th, 2026. The front page of the News Gazette has a photo with the headline, Portraits Only, and the caption, Illinois Senator Tomislav Ivicic poses for photos with fans at Wednesday's Kicking Cancer Dinner and Auction event at Gordyville, USA in Gifford. The fundraiser benefiting the American Cancer Society included a buffet-style dinner, silent auction, raffle, and plenty of chances to interact with Coach Brad Underwood and members of this year's Fighting Illini Final Four men's basketball team. Four teens arrested in possession of five guns. One also had universal vehicle key generator, programmable key. Four individuals, three of whom are juveniles from Champaign, have been charged with gun-related offenses after a Saturday incident that originated from a traffic stop. At around 12:50 a.m. Saturday, Champaign police located a stolen vehicle at Hedge Road and Mattis Avenue. According to State's Attorney Julia Reitz, when an officer attempted a traffic stop, the vehicle fled and was located soon after by Champaign County Sheriff's deputies. It was unoccupied, but an officer saw four subjects getting into an Uber nearby. Officers stopped the Uber and found a 19-year-old and three 17-year-old suspects. During the course of the investigation, the police found five firearms in the subject's possession, including two stolen firearms, one ghost gun, and an AR-15-style rifle. Ghost gun is a term for a firearm without a serial number, making it untraceable. These firearms are typically homemade from kits or individually purchased parts. Officers also found a universal key generator and a programmable smart key, which had been programmed to start the stolen vehicle. Reed said that the key generator and smart key together allow the user to program the key as a replacement for more than 700 vehicles in 1 minute. Cameron Moore, 19, was charged with one count of aggravated unlawful possession of a firearm, which is a Class 4 felony. He was released after appearing in court Monday and will be due to appear again in June. Keith Roberson, 17, was charged in juvenile court with one count of aggravated unlawful possession of a firearm in reference to the AR-15-style rifle found in his possession. He was detained and is being held in the juvenile detention center. James Dye, 17, was charged in juvenile court with one count of unlawful possession of a stolen firearm and one count of aggravated unlawful possession of a firearm. He was found with a stolen Smith & Wesson 9mm handgun in his possession. He was also detained and is being held in the juvenile detention center. Prentice Center, 17, was charged in multiple cases and is being held in the juvenile detention center. In this case, he was charged with one count of unlawful possession of a stolen firearm for a stolen Glock 17 and one count of aggravated unlawful possession of a firearm for the ghost gun which was found in his backpack. He was also found in possession of the programmable smart key and the key generator which was found in his backpack. Center has also been charged with a count of aggravated unlawful possession of a firearm as a result of a September 2024 investigation in which he ran from police and a firearm was found in his flight path, Reed said. The firearm was sent for testing to Illinois State Police and returned earlier this year, with results showing Center's DNA on the firearm. He was also charged with a count of burglary based on an investigation into a March 22, 2025 burglary to a motor vehicle. Reed said that in that matter, a vehicle owner reported that their car was burglarized and that a Glock 17 9mm firearm had been stolen from the center console. Champaign police found Center in the area of that time of the report. He was deferred to a juvenile diversion program, but did not complete it. That Glock 17 was the one in his possession when he was arrested on Saturday. Head over heels to compete here. 2023 Judah Christian graduate worked hard for a spot on Cal team. Tucker Yasunaga and the California men's gymnastics team will have plenty of local support for their final meet of the season. Even if the Bears are competing more than 2,100 miles away from their campus in Berkeley at State Farm Center in Champaign this weekend. That's because Yasunaga can serve as a part tour guide and welcome committee to Champaign this week for his team. The Champaign native and 2023 Judah Christian graduate will compete along with the rest of his Cal teammates inside the State Farm Center beginning on Friday in the NCAA championships. "I've had this date basically circled since the start of the season," Yasunaga told the News Gazette. "Definitely excited and some to come home. Family, friends, everybody's going to be here." Yasunaga is the only gymnast on Cal's roster from Illinois, much less the only one from Champaign, a place where Illini gymnastics has thrived for decades, but not so much on the high school scene. He's had plenty to look forward to since it was announced that the NCAA championships would take place in his hometown. "I really wanted to be in the lineup," Yasunaga said. "I pushed myself all summer long just to be in the lineups and to be in that spot so I could compete there." His father, Shig, said the Yasunaga faithful will be easy to spot at the State Farm Center when the Bears take the floor at 1 p.m. Friday in the first of two qualifying sessions, and likely easier to hear. "This entire week, I think, will be a celebration of his overall journey, and to be quite frank, every moment that led him back to where he came from," Shig said. "Everyone connected with him is excited for him." Tucker started working in the gym toward a craft that eventually took him to the Division I ranks when he was just 5 years old. He spent much of his youth center career training with Ian Dennehy, the founder of Champaign Gymnastics Academy. "Working with Tucker was a really fun experience," Dennehy said. "I got to watch him grow and spend a lot of time with him. He's a really sharp, hard-working kid. You can tell pretty early whether a kid really has what it takes to be really good at the sport." Dennehy hosted Cal for a team dinner upon the Bears' arrival in Champaign earlier this week. "Some of our younger competitive boys got to meet the Cal guys and get some autographs," Dennehy said. "It was a fun little homecoming event for Tucker." Tucker, for his part, grew up an Illinois fan and remembers going to plenty of basketball games at State Farm Center. Shig noted that Tucker attended the 2008 Rose Bowl and had visited every Big Ten football stadium before the conference's westward expansion in 2024 included Oregon, Southern Cal, UCLA, and Washington. Competing at a high major program like Cal isn't something the Yasunaga family takes for granted. The same sentiment applies to watching Tucker this week back in his hometown. "It will always be meaningful to him," Shig Yasunaga said. "That's what makes this trip home so special. He gets to come home and he gets to compete on this stage. He gets to compete with those guys in the Illinois uniform that he's so often rooted for." Tucker, a sociology major, chose to take his talents to Berkeley, California for his college career, where he helped Cal set a modern program parallel bar record earlier this season. "I think the team fit me really well," Tucker said. "My dad always said I was a California kid, and I had the opportunity to go out there and got the spot. This team has been amazing for me. They're like brothers to me." Tucker's return to Champaign isn't the first time he's had the chance to perform in front of a friendly crowd during his college career. Cal competed in a triangular meet at Greenville on February 7th, with plenty of family, friends, and former coaches making the two-hour drive to Southern Illinois to watch the Bears beat Simpson and fall to host Greenville. "That was a much different experience," Tucker said. "A little far away from Champaign, but that just shows the support that I think I'm going to have in Champaign as well." Shig has flown to California several times to watch Tucker perform. "This whole season, I would say, it has been special for him," Shig said. "The Mountain Pacific Sports Federation Championships were hosted by Cal, so he got to compete at the conference tournament in his college home. Now he gets to come here and compete at the NCAA in his hometown. Enjoying the NCAA's biggest stage is something Tucker is looking forward to, but how Cal performs this weekend is even bigger, but he doesn't take the opportunity of returning to Champaign for granted. I'm really just excited just to be there and be in a home environment in front of a bunch of family and friends," Tucker said. "I'm excited to show off the gymnastics that I've been doing on the West Coast." Teacher of the Week, Jessica Roberts, first grade, Unity Elementary School, Unity East Elementary School, Philo. After 1 year of substitute teaching in the Champaign-Urbana area, Jessica Roberts found her teaching home 15 years ago when she accepted a position at Unity East Elementary School in Philo, where she still teaches first grade. As a first grade teacher, she shines in building strong early literacy skills while maintaining a structured, nurturing classroom where students feel safe and supported, Principal Jim Carver said. Her warmth, consistency, and passion for teaching make her a standout educator and a valuable part of our school community. I find my work important because I am helping children every single day. All children learn in their own way. Some students learn best with a standing desk, a stool chair, a fidget, a chair band, and or a ball chair. I want all my students to feel safe and that they can have all the tools they need to help them learn. It is more than just academics. I teach social, emotional learning, and problem solving every day. I became a teacher because ever since I was little, I wanted to be a teacher. I found myself playing school at home from a young age with my stuffed animals and eventually my friends. I have always worked with children. I used to work in the nursery at my church, babysat for many families, and worked in the playroom at the fitness center. I knew that I wanted my future job to be working and teaching children. In high school, I was given the opportunity in my careers class to observe in a classroom and work with students. This was my first experience being in the classroom and teaching students. I learned so much and was reassured that I wanted to go to school to become a teacher. Kids bring so much laughter and joy into our lives, and I get to experience that every day as a teacher. My favorite or most unique lesson that I teach is my favorite unit I teach happens during the month of December. I teach a traveling around the world unit. My students get to get on an airplane, make a passport, and travel to different countries. When in the countries, we learn what their traditions are during the holiday season. We get to have a piñata party, try food from those countries, sing songs, make a scrapbook, and so much more. My students learn so much about other cultures and have a blast while learning. Past students will come to me and say they remember this unit. It is definitely a memorable unit that I hope my students will remember forever. My most fulfilling moments on the job are when students get to see how perseverance and hard work allow them to accomplish anything. I always try to find opportunities for my students to push through the hard work so that they can see how they can do anything. I would also say about a month into school when I have built those connections and relationships with my students. This is when the true learning starts because they feel safe, seen, and heard. I strive to ensure that all my students know that my classroom is a safe place where they can be themselves and be loved for who they are. We work through challenges with peers, self, and school. Those small teachable moments are so important. I keep students engaged by having them active in their learning. They may come up to the board and explain how they found the answer or share with a friend, partner talk. During science, students explore through hands-on activities. I do my best to put movement into learning as much as possible. I also provide flexible seating in the classroom. Each Friday, students get to pick a new seat that is best for them. They take pride in having the responsibility to choose their spot. Something else I'm passionate about is exercise. Exercise is a great tool to stay healthy and to help with everybody's tasks, everyday tasks. Every morning before school, I give myself time to exercise and get stronger. This helps wake me up for the day, relax, and aids in my overall brain health. I am also passionate about learning more about social emotional learning. When I learn more and have new ideas, I bring them into my classroom. One of my favorite books to read is How to Train Your Amygdala by Anna Housley Jester. I find it so important to teach children what is happening in their brains and provide them with tools to calm their bodies and minds. I teach my students what mindfulness is, and we practice ways to be mindful every day. My favorite teacher and subject to study in school was my absolute favorite teacher was my kindergarten teacher at Robeson Elementary School, Mrs. Mortensen. She was the kindest soul and made sure all her students felt loved. She taught us through play and always had the biggest smile on her face. When you walked into her classroom, you knew you were going to be cared for, taught, and loved with patience. If I weren't a teacher, I would be a school counselor. I love helping kids who are going through hard times, need extra support or help problem solving. As a teacher, I do get to aid kids in this way, but being a counselor would allow me the time to work with students one-on-one or in a small group. Mike Hale's column, Records and Radio. Nothing like news radio networks of old still exists. A couple follow-ups to my last column, and that'll put a wrap on the network radio discussion. But first, a quiz question. In 1986, a major news magazine had this lady's picture on the front cover. The article called her the Princess of Pop, with a sophisticated sound and elegant look. Who is she? Answer at the end of the column. Thank you for the wide range of comments regarding the CBS Radio to Fox Radio transition. I appreciate you setting politics aside and looking at this as how do we solve the problem with Paramount CBS placed on our lap. What saddens me on all of this, there is nothing, absolutely nothing, in the radio world in 2026 that is a straightforward, just-the-facts network with any real news-gathering resources. In my early days of radio, you had four choices: CBS, NBC, ABC, and Mutual. Each of those networks were news organizations that operated within clearly defined news standards. When you became an affiliate, you got a copy of the book on their news gathering and reporting rules. I will say the Fox Radio product is different from what's on the television side. With that said, just like CBS, ABC, Salem, Town Hall Radio, and NPR, you can dissect every newscast on every network and find biases that weren't prevalent in network radio a couple of decades ago. I am satisfied with the Fox product delivered after the first couple of days. A couple of questions that came out when opening up the network radio discussion. Ryan Oakley asked about the history of ABC, NBC, and Mutual on local stations. I don't have any documentation before my arrival in CU in 1978. My knowledge base is what I remember through my first 22 years in CU. Once I arrived at WDWS-WHMS in 2000, I didn't pay much attention to network affiliations of competitors. Let's see what I remember. WLRW 94.5 was an affiliate of the ABC Entertainment Network through most of the 90s, what was one of the four networks run by ABC Radio. At that point in time, if you were an entertainment affiliate, you would have exclusive access to Paul Harvey. WPGU 107.1, another ABC radio offering. The ABC Contemporary Network, which also resided on WLS Chicago. PGU made a switch in the 80s as NBC Radio began a second news network called The Source, targeted to 18 to 34-year-old music listeners. WKIO 103.9 92.5, another ABC radio network, the ABC FM network. This network evolved from serving FM beautiful music stations in 1968 to young adult music listeners as the 70s progressed. We made a switch in the mid-1980s to the upstart RKO1 network. A great incentive for us to switch was a free satellite dish. In 1984, broadcast dishes cost about $12,000. RKO's business model was delivering their product exclusively via satellite. With a free dish, we no longer received programming via equalized mono telephone lines. Now our newscasts and feature programs were delivered in glorious stereo. The RKO network in the 90s became Unistar, and our newest product shifted from RKO Gathered and Reported to CNN, which had opened a radio division. Since 1978, to my knowledge, there wasn't a Mutual Radio Network news affiliate in CU, although WDWS was a secondary affiliate to be able to clear Larry King and America in the morning. Nor was there a regular NBC Radio News on the Hour affiliate. A second question from Tom Warwick, who remembered a talk I gave in the 90s about the radio industry. Tom asked about stations getting monetary compensation from their network in 2026 and the effect of CBS Radio going away. Great memory, Tom. Most network affiliation agreements outside of the top 100 radio markets were barter. You got their news product in return for their running their commercials. Back in the 90s, our WKAO GM, Jeff Balding, negotiated a compensation deal with Unistar where we got 35 to 65 cents per network commercial we cleared, virtually unheard of in a market our size, number 212. When I arrived at DWS, the CBS contract was strictly barter. I have exhausted the network news radio topic. Thanks for reading. Thank you for reaching out with comments. I always appreciate receiving topic ideas to explore. GOP gubernatorial candidate Bailey moves into Chicago apartment. He seeks to attract voters living in what he previously called a hellhole. Darren Bailey isn't just trying to win over voters. He wants the sheriff's campaign to be an impressive experience for Chicago residents. Speaking to Capital News Illinois on Wednesday before taking the stage at the annual Illinois Gun Owners Lobby Day in Springfield, the Republican nominee for governor said he's moved into an apartment on Chicago's near south side that will serve as a sort of headquarters for his Chicago area campaign operations. It's not an entirely unusual move for Bailey, a former state lawmaker and farmer from Clay County, about 4 hours south of the city. He lived in the building formerly known as the John Hancock Center on Michigan Avenue 4 years ago with a similar goal, though it didn't pay off as well, as he lost the race by 12 percentage points to Governor J.B. Pritzker. He only received about 15% of the vote in the city. Bailey hasn't always been fond of Chicago. 4 years ago, he called the city a hellhole, a statement he said he no longer believes. This year's move to part of Bailey's promise to focus more on getting to know voters in the city and suburbs. Bailey said he doesn't mean he's forgotten about downstate voters who propelled him to the party's nomination for a second time last month. I feel like our base knows and understands because I communicated that continually as we were visiting within the last several months, telling them that, you know, you're not going to see a lot of us after the primary, Bailey said. Bailey said he hopes a donor will help cover the apartment's cost. State law generally prohibits using campaign funds for homes, but allows some gray area for candidates and public officials to defray costs. It's common for state legislators, for example, to use campaign funds to pay for a hotel or apartment in Springfield. Apartment rent in the South Luth neighborhood starts around $2,000 per month, according to real estate group Downtown Apartment Collective. Pritzker's campaign said voters shouldn't believe that Bailey's changed his mind about the city. Darren Bailey has spent his entire career demonizing Chicago and the people who live here, Pritzker spokesperson Alex Goff said in a statement. He can change his address, but that doesn't change the facts. Darren Bailey is the same extreme, unsuccessful, and totally unqualified candidate he's always been. When Illinois voters reject Donald Trump's lapdog for the third time this fall, hoping he gets the message. Bailey's efforts to appeal to Chicago voters have included striking a softer tone. He's also insisted that his message will be reflective of his own thoughts and not those of other Republicans. That includes President Donald Trump, who endorsed Bailey in 2022 and voiced confidence in Bailey's candidacy again this year. On Monday, Bailey called out the president's social media message bashing Pope Leo XIV's condemnation of the war in Iran. Bailey wrote in his own post that Trump should apologize. Supporters of Bailey and the president lit up the comment section criticizing him for daring to say Trump was wrong. I've always said that when I see something wrong, I'll call it out, and I believe I always have. So I felt the necessity to say this is not right and what happened here, and I believe an apology would go a long way in rectifying this, Bailey said. Bailey said he's still open to receiving Trump's endorsement this year, but doesn't feel it would influence his race. He said calling out the president's comments on the Pope also gave him an opportunity to say, I am my own individual. I'm here to represent you without any outside influence. I believe that my base of supporters will understand that and respect that, Bailey said. Bailey is still quick to pull the trigger on blaming problems in Illinois on Pritzker, asked about rising oil gas prices since Trump launched the war in Iran, Bailey argued high costs for gas, utilities, property taxes, and other areas were a problem before the recent spike in gas prices. I believe there is an awakening and to pivot and throw all this stuff on President Trump. That's J.B. Pritzker's talking points, Bailey said. While he's been focusing on addressing suburban voters, Wednesday's focus while speaking to fellow gun owners was about shoring up support from his base. If you truly are concerned about your Second Amendment rights, get out and vote, because there's an apathy that exists here as well, Bailey said. Lawmakers debate best path to regulate AI. They recognize its harm while hearing testimony on dozens of bills. As the artificial intelligence industry rapidly expands, state legislators appear poised to continue imposing regulations on the technology. Committees in both chambers of the Illinois General Assembly have heard bills that would implement various restrictions and give recommendations on the use of AI in state government in certain industries. The state already has some laws in place, but legislators raised concerns about the harm AI may still be causing consumers. On April 9th and 10th, the Senate held two virtual subject matter hearings on nearly 50 bills about AI and consumer protection, privacy, education, and data centers. Senator Mary Edley Allen, Democrat, Libertyville, pointed to social media as an example of what happens when government does not place guardrails on new technology. If we get social media wrong, and we did, we cannot afford to get AI wrong, Edley Allen said. Will we act on the lessons we have already learned? Industry stakeholders recommended lawmakers let the federal government take control of regulating AI while acknowledging concerns about its impact. The president, however, declared via executive order in December that he is not in favor of broad AI regulations. AI advocates also recommended Illinois mirror other states' laws to prevent a complicated system for companies who operate in many locations. Our core concern is creating a patchwork environment, making Illinois a compliance outlier, said Jarrett Catlin, state AI policy advisor at TechNet, a national technology policy advocacy group. We need to create clear incentives for responsible behavior without prescribing a one-size-fits-all compliance regime. The patchwork argument echoes the president's executive order, which declares that companies must be free to innovate without cumbersome regulation, and that state regulation thwarts this imperative. In the hearings, the senators emphasized that they did not want to hinder development and business in the state, but are deeply concerned about the lack of guardrails currently in place, particularly around chatbots and minors. This isn't about stifling innovation, but you need to have guardrails to protect minors, said Senator Sue Rezin, Republican of Morris. This bill is about ensuring that as technology moves faster than the law, we don't leave consumer protections in the dust, especially when it comes to minors. Current and proposed statutes. Illinois already has some laws targeting AI use in image manipulation and intellectual property, according to Andrew Cunningham, Senior Director of Government Relations for the Illinois Chamber of Commerce. And broader legislation can be applied to AI usage, as has been done to AI meeting tools under the Biometric Information Privacy Act. This has been Mary Mortland reading the News Gazette Part 1 for Thursday, April 16th, 2026. Please stay tuned for Part 2.